Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's Monday, January 9th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Well, Melody.
Well, we had a nice day in gold today. Following through, was up all day. Had a high of 1187, and in the New York spot price after market, we're looking at 1183, up 10 bucks. Silver up 12 at 16.66. 16.66. Platinum is up 10 at 981. Palladium is up 3 at $762. USDX today was down 0.23 at 101.97. Boy, they beat up crude oil today, down 2.13 at 51.86. And I think the markets were down. I had no chance at all to follow the markets today, so this will be a surprise to me also. Ooh, down 74 points, 19,889. The NASDAQ was up 10, 55.31. The S&P down 8 at 22.68. 10-year yield, 2.38%, down 0.04. And, of course, the euro is stronger at 106. Japan was closed overnight for another holiday. And European markets were pretty much unchanged overnight. So, interesting day in the markets. There's just so much chatter going on. A lot of things that are changing, and you hear various reports. You're not sure which is correct and which isn't, but one that I found interesting today, and also in the NASDAQ, I just wanted to, it did close, that number I gave you, it did close at a record high, even though we had the weak energy number. So the NASDAQ did close at a record high. And report today, big headlines everywhere, Alibaba, Jack Ma chats with Trump about how to create 1 million U.S. jobs over a five-year period. And they had a meeting today where they discussed new jobs, new U.S. jobs. Ma said that the Alibaba's expansion would focus on products like garments, wine, fruits, with a special focus on trade between the American Midwest and the Southeast Asia. He told reporters, "We're focused on small business. We specifically talked about supporting 1 million small businesses, especially in the Midwest of America, small businesses on the platform selling products, agriculture products, and America services to China and Asia, because we're pretty big in Asia." He says where those jobs would come from is unclear, while an Alibaba spokesperson told CNBC before the meeting that the Chinese online retail giant company would create 1 million jobs. There's a couple interesting things about that. Alibaba is like an eBay. It enables third-party sellers in China to take their own businesses to the internet. The company only had 36,000 full-time employees, almost all in China, as of March 31st, according to the SEC filings, but with more than 10 million active sellers as of 2015. Alibaba estimates its China retail marketplace has contributed to the creation of over 15 million job opportunities. And they got comparisons on there about Amazon and so forth. Trump says, "We had a great meeting." He says he loves this country, referencing Jack Ma. He says he loves this country and he loves China. He says, "Jack and I are going to do some great things." And, of course, Alibaba's stock rose 1% today. And so we'll just have to see how this is. But here's the clincher. Remember the announcement, Al, where Trump released, where you had the Japanese tech giant SoftBank come out and say, "We're going to create 50,000 U.S. jobs"?
No, I don't remember that.
Where have you been? Pay attention.
I was took my vacation out to Tahiti. So it's kind of out of touch for about 10 days.
Well, the SoftBank CEO is on Alibaba's board. So you have all these little interconnections. Everyone, you know, it's kind of just like, you know, it's what's so different?
It's the hype. We have different hype, Melody. You got the same products, but we have new and improved hype to sell the products. And that's all that really matters, Melody. It's the promotion, not the product. It's the promotion.
Well, Alibaba did face an SEC investigation about its accounting methods last year. I know he's in this country also buying up lots of land, which, you know, hey, it's a free country, right?
Well, if he's taking money, if he's making a profit in this country and he's spending it in this country, that perhaps is something. I don't know, but, you know, what's he going to do with the land? That's the question.
Yep. Remember,
is land going to be used? Is it farmland he's buying?
He purchased a lot of land up there in the Northeast. I can't remember which state.
Well, it's closed for... One of the problems you have is we've run this situation where we've been flooding the world with our dollars. Yippee, we were able to export our inflation and the rest of that. But now, if those dollars start coming back here, and I believe they are, right, guess what? Foreign people get to buy American products. And some people say, yeah, yippee, that's good. But if they're buying American land, for example, and converting it into and using it as farmland, for example, to feed the people of Asia, China in particular, is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? What is that, Melody? They're going to buy the farm, if they're going to buy farmland in this country, are they going to hire local Americans to operate, run and operate the farm, or are they going to bring employees in from China? There's just something about all this, this globalism.
Yep.
In the end, it will destroy your nation. And there are a lot of attractive things that people can point to and say, oh, look how much money we can make. Look how much money we can save. There's a bunch of stuff happening there. But there are other things in life besides profit and loss. It's not just economics. There's also questions of nation, of culture, of values, of language. There's a bunch of things going on here. And we are just chasing, running down the road. Look, a dollar bill. I get it, you know. I'm going to run down and die, take a dive for the dollar bill. Somewhere along the line, I think people are going to wake up and realize that a blind pursuit of more money,
in the long run,
is not a good thing.
And you know what? I guess this is the problem, because on one hand, you feel optimistic. It's like, finally, you're hearing things that you want to hear.
Yeah, I know.
You know, that we've talked about for how many years? 20 plus years. It's all the things, all the problems. Hey, somebody's addressing them. And then it comes back to like, well, you know what? Something just isn't right. It's you know, maybe you can't even place the exact, you know, maybe you just can't. You can't. It's just a feeling.
Yeah, you can identify it. It's just a question of making money. That's what this comes down to.
Just like here, you have Jared Kushner is going to be named a senior advisor to the president. Jared Kushner is, of course, Mr. Trump's son-in-law, and so he's going to be, you know, very much next to the president. A senior advisor to the president.
Yep.
How much closer can you get? But on the other hand, now you have him working with Anbang, and I'm not sure that's a proper pronunciation, Insurance Group, which is a Chinese financial behemoth estimated with assets of $285 billion, and they're talking and working together for rebuilding New York. You know, it's just like... you can say, oh, well, you know, that's all right because he's going to build a wall and this is okay. You know, well, we're going to overlook this. There's just something. And yet, to this point, nothing has really happened to where you can say, aha, told you. It just doesn't fare right. It doesn't feel right. And again, identifying something that it's just not.
I was under the impression that Trump was a protectionist, that he was inclined to increase economic barriers and essentially recreate markets, not just the markets that are here, but recreate the productivity here, right? Meaning put jobs back here. At least that was the theory. And I was operating under the assumption that Trump was pro-protectionist policy, higher tariffs and the rest of that, not just a wall between the United States and Mexico, but tariff barriers, you know, to kind of protect American jobs from foreign competition and blah, blah, blah. But when I see Trump dealing with Jack Ma, or whatever his name is, from Alibaba, that's pretty good evidence that Trump is not, he's not dedicated to protectionism. He's more dedicated, he at least is tempted, seduced, willing to talk with people that are involved in globalism and multinational corporations and so on. And I can't help, I don't feel good about that, and I know that a lot of people would disagree and say it's harmless and it's good for everybody and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I have my doubts. I think we would be better off. You know, we have the best market in the world right here. And there's no reason why people who make products in Florida should have to figure out how to sell them in Peking. Why not sell them in South Dakota? Why not? Isn't that enough? Isn't there enough of a market here? There is something about this international razzle-dazzle that is, I think we will live to regret it before it's done, although, who knows? We'll watch and see where this goes, but I'm hoping that Trump will be more protectionist than globalist, but we'll see.
But the conflict of interest with his son-in-law, you know, it just seems like it's, you know, perhaps, you know, the politicians aren't being bought off by lobbyists, but it still feels the same way, just in different, you know, just described differently. So, but we'll just have to see.
Well, that's the thing about it. You know, the previous politicians were just politicians. And you buy them the way you buy politicians is you pay them a bribe, typically. But Trump's not a politician. He's a businessman. And so you can sit back, and if you want to be, you know, pessimistic, cynical, negative, concerned, you can say that the way to bribe Trump is to offer business opportunities that he or his family members can be involved in that ultimately won't necessarily be broadcast to the American people, but if his son-in-law is going to mastermind some of these deals with China, for example, you have to assume that he's going to establish relationships with China, even though they may not be profitable during the 4 or 8 years that Trump is in office. Afterwards, he's going to know where everybody is. He's the number one guy, and somebody is going to pay him a lot of money to, if he's not operating his own business. And I would guess that he would operate his own business, but I don't know. There is just, it's unsettling.
Really?
It's disturbing. It's the sort of thing where who is cutting a deal? All right. You know, Trump is cutting a deal with Jack Ma, billionaire. Yay. Who's cutting a deal with Joe Sixpack down on Main Street here in this country? Anybody? I know Trump promised he would, and I hope he does. But it still looks, you know, I am a skeptic. After supporting George Bush.
Well, I would announce that, Al.
Yeah, I understand that. I understand it's a great embarrassment, humiliation, but, you know, I did. I thought, Bush, oh, yay. I knew he wasn't that bright, but I figured Dick Cheney'd keep him in line, and he said what I wanted to hear. It took me a couple of years to realize that SOB doesn't mean anything he says.
You and I didn't know each other then, or you would know
no.
better.
No. And then when Obama comes along, here I am again playing the idiot.
Yeah, why
I thought,
did you?
I was in favor of Obama, right? Just because, well, not just because,
just
but I figured it can't be worse than Bush. No matter what happens, it can't be. Well, yes.
Oh, yes, it was.
You know, there I go. I was. So I have become, when it comes to politics, I may support them or advocate them and the rest of that, but once they're elected, I get extremely skeptical. I have been burned. It's like a man who's been divorced 5 or 6 times. I don't know if I'm going to get married again. You know,
just like the cabinet. I like most of his cabinet. There's something wrong with Tillerson. You know, the coming from Exxon, his relationship, his friendship with, is it Tillerson? It's Tillerson, right?
I don't know.
His relationship with Russia. There's just something there that just, you know, it gives me pause and think, is that really what good can come out of it and what bad can come out of it?
Yeah, I know. I know, the problem you got is
Van Nuchin, you know, CEO. Yeah, you need somebody in there, but on the other hand, you know,
he's not one of us.
No, and
there's the problem with this thing. These guys that are going in there,
you said it. Now, let me finish. You said it. They're not one of us, and yet I believe that's how Donald Trump won, was by coming across as being one of us.
I agree. And I agree, but the people that he's appointing,
he wasn't. He is not.
You know, they might be. We can hope they are sensitive to the needs of ordinary Americans in this country, but it's hard to imagine that's exactly true. Don't get to be a big-time CEO and the rest of that by crying over people that are unemployed or whatever. I mean, you're going to you have to fight and scramble, push and shove in order to get to the top of these pyramids. And once you get there, I don't know. I would feel if it was possible somehow. It's not a bad thing to have a very intelligent, hardworking, knowledgeable guy from corporate America to take control of some bureaucracy. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but just the same, I would feel more comfortable with Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. You know, the movie. And I can't even think of the actor's name, and everybody knows it. Jimmy Stewart, exactly right. All right, one of us, ordinary man, who somehow got himself in a position to do what was right for the people. These corporate executives, these superstars, billionaires, they can't be accustomed to doing what's best for other people. They
Which
have
all this means
taking care of the number one.
What all this means is a lot of volatility. Gold prices are going to rise significantly this year, both gold and silver. So, you know, we've got a good year coming, folks. Started off great. Al?
Only another 350 some days to go. Find out what the price is going to be at the end of the year. Melody and I will be back in a moment on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
1-800-375-4188, our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Prices are moving. Everything we have here is still at a bargain. We've been running specials for quarter ounce American Gold Eagles, Silver Eagles. Great time to have them. 2017s will be out, next week? So we can get them shipped to you shortly thereafter. So great prices. Prices are rising. Volatility is going to be the term of the year. I can't even imagine. It's going to be hard to keep up, but it's going to be an exciting year because there will be a lot of action. Lots of action going on in these markets. So, and I think gold, I think you'll see the dollar come down, gold go up, silver go up, and so don't wait. Don't wait for it to go up. Call us, 800-375-4188.
An interesting article here from Gains, Pains, and Capital. Just short, makes a nice point, interesting point. The headline is investors have gone all in on stocks. According to TrimTabs, since the presidential election on November 8th, individual investors have put $93 billion into stock-based ETFs. This is more than 150% of the money investors put into those same ETFs during the entire year of 2015. Investors put more money into stocks in 8 weeks after Trump has been elected than they did during the entire year of 2015. Now, that's, on one hand, you look at it and say, oh my gosh, this is really hot. This is a bull market or whatever. But on the other hand, they continue and they say this kind of extreme buying is only seen during market tops. And they pose a question: with investors now all in, who is left to buy? All right? Everybody jumped in during this 8 weeks. Stock markets went up to record highs. But at some point or another, we run out of people who want to buy in. Everybody's bought in. And the result is, if you want to sell some stock, you can't necessarily expect more people to be diving into the pool and bringing more money and say, yeah, I'll pay $1,000 for that stock that used to sell for $100. I'll pay for it because we're really optimistic. They are suggesting that we may be out of new investors. And if we are, the market is destined for a fairly quick correction. And they say this sort of extreme buying is only seen during market tops, which implies that the records we've seen, Dow Jones, for example, Standard & Poor's 500, those records are we're going to bounce off those record highs and we're going to see a significant decline. With 99% of investors believing stocks won't fall, the bulls are ripe for the slaughter. That's comment from Gains and Pains and Capitals. So, you know, what goes up must go down and blah, blah, blah. And when it goes up rapidly, it's going to go down rapidly. Or at least that's conventional wisdom. We'll watch and see if that actually turns out or not.
Well, there's so many reports that are peeking out that are all signs of a market that's overdone. Yeah. And, the people are the last ones to get in. And that's when everybody gets out and leaves them there, and that's why they lose everything. So it's a sign there, folks. So which one are you going to be?
It's like being invited to a great party. You know, you say, you won't believe this, Melody. I got invited to the ball, the presidential ball. Well, I'm last on the list, perhaps, to be invited. And by the time I get there, everybody else has left, and somebody's going to get stuck with the bill for the ball. And it's going to be the last people invited, because the rest of them are gone, and they're not going to pay their bills.
They've already partied. Here's an interesting article. It's about cars and Cadillac. And Cadillac believes that young people are turning away from traditional car ownership. U.S. car sales had a big decline last year, and people in cities are finding it easier than ever to use ride-hailing services like Uber. There's other rental services like Zipcar. Well, Cadillac is hoping that it's found the answer to reinventing car ownership. And this is a new luxury vehicle subscription service. All right. The brand's upcoming, it's called Book Service, which gives members access to Cadillac vehicles without the long-term commitment of leasing, financing, or buying. They just have to pay a monthly fee of $1,500. They're aiming this at Gen X and Y and Gen Y customers who want the experience. Well, they're still living out of their mommy and daddy's homes. I don't know how they can afford $1,500, but this is without the traditional ownership. What they're going to do, this book fills the gap between leasing or buying and renting. So basically what they're going to do is rent. This book's $1,500 monthly fee is definitely more expensive than just leasing a Cadillac. But Cadillac's pitch is that members only have a month-to-month commitment. You can switch cars up to 18 times a year whenever you want to, and there's no limit on mileage. Members also benefit by not having to worry about registration, taxes, maintenance, or insurance. All of that is handled by Cadillac. So if a member were to get involved in an accident and they were responsible, Cadillac would cover the premium, but the member would pay a $750 deductible. And another of the perk is that members are invited to all, well, I don't consider that going to a Cadillac event. So you're charged $1,500 a month. You can trade that car 18 times a year. And you don't own it. Cadillac owns it. You have none of the responsibility.
It sounds like a car thief. Sounds like you're just going down. What do you want to go out for a ride in tonight, Melody? Here, I'll walk down the street here.
We'll bust into the
Cadillac or maybe the Mercedes. What do you feel like?
You could drive a brand new car every month, have a different car every month. Cadillac delivers the car. They pick it up. And this is actually being launched in New York City on February 1st as a month-to-month arrangement. The service will eventually become available in other markets across the U.S. as at like L.A. And you think to yourself, how could that even work?
I understand. This sounds like something so strange. It's the idea that something could go viral. Right? Yeah. That happens on the internet. I'm not sure that you can get a viral automobile plan. Maybe you can't. That's what they're beagling for. If I had to guess, we'll see the end of this within 18, 24 months, but who knows? May work out great. I don't know. But, it's kind of interesting because you can work this, depending on how you work it, if you can trade 18 times, that's every couple of weeks over the course of the year. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, you might not have to put any gas or oil in. If you work it right, you can ask for a new car whenever the gas gauge gets right down to E. Tell them, send me a car. I'm out on Highway 44 about 12 miles east of Topeka or whatever it is. And they can pull in with a new car, and you don't have to buy any gasoline. So maybe that's part of the attraction.
Well, they take care of all the maintenance, the insurance, taxes, registration.
What are they going to do about traffic tickets? I mean, this is going to be an interesting challenge for the police, I think. I'm not absolutely certain about this, but you're going to have to be driving a different car every time you get a traffic ticket. I don't know if that creates an additional obstacle for the police or not. I suppose probably not.
Yeah,
it'll be on your driver's license, not on your car, but I don't know.
I would.
People are scrambling. We live in an extraordinarily competitive world, and people are scrambling to come up with some new gimmick to sell something to the public right now. Buy from me, all right? And maybe get a good gimmick. Maybe you've got a good gimmick that will keep you going better than the competition. But for how long? 6 weeks? 6 months? A year? How long before somebody else comes up with an even better gimmick? And all of this competition ultimately has to chip away at profit margins for these corporations. I can't imagine that Cadillac is making this program available to people with the idea that they're going to make more money off of this than they would off of selling the automobile or even leasing the automobile. This to me sounds like some kind of a, this is a loss leader, this is something like a giveaway, and to me it indicates somebody is a little bit desperate.
Two things will happen. Number one, you'll really end up liking the car that you're driving. It's like test driving a new car. So you'll find one that you'll like, and you'll get tired of trading, and you'll just decide to buy it. So I would think that these would basically be turned into, you know, a full-time sales
maybe.
You know, purchase. It would turn into a purchase. Because I can't imagine, you know, if you're trading 18 times a year, that'll get old after a
while. Well, I know it'll.
You know, and then you're paying out $1,500. It's like, why do I want to pay $1,500 a month, you know, when I could have the same vehicle that I really found that I like, and it's only going to cost me $750. So.
Yeah, but the thing about it, $1,500 a month includes your insurance.
Yes, it does.
Right? I mean, get done with it. This isn't a bad deal. This may not be a bad, certainly for an expensive, you know, top-of-the-line luxury car, $1,500 a month. If you were going to compare that, if you were buying the automobile yourself, on what's your car payment, your mortgage payment, or your automobile payment per month, plus insurance on the vehicle? Plus, if you're changing it every 3 weeks, I'd get the vehicle with the extra-large gas tank. I might be able to operate one of these things for about 3 weeks, run out of gas, and get a new vehicle.
One of those Escalades. Give me an Escalade. Yes. I want a different color every 6 weeks.
I understand.
But you can actually order this through an app on your phone.
No, that's another one. Yeah, there's an app for that. Yep.
Yeah. So I thought that was
the world is passing me by, Melody, or else I'm not keeping up. I'm not sure which is which. An app for that. An app for that.
An app. Anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's interesting, all right. And what does it foretell or forebode?
Just confirms how much of a disposable society that we really are, particularly Gen X's. And you know, it's again no ownership pride. No, you know, so it just shows us what type of society that the youth is are willing to accept. Also,
I mean, this is like. I've talked to people who know some Uber drivers.
No responsibility. Yeah,
that's the problem. They pick up passengers, put them in the back of the vehicle, and these people will tear the car apart. They're spilling Coke and rum and everything else on the floor, and you know they can. Some of these people, you pick up a group of people, and they can be terrible. Completely irresponsible and just laugh at the idea of they trash the car essentially within the half hour, 45 minutes or 15 minutes they're in there, they can trash the car to a significant degree. What do you suppose will be the condition of these vehicles after they get them back? There, you know, you've been using this car for 3 weeks, don't have to wash it, don't have to, you know, don't have to wash it, don't have to vacuum it out, the rest of that sort of thing.
No different than a rental.
The cars that are used, I bet they're going to be cheap.
No different than a rental.
You
know, rentals always come back pretty beat up. But, you know, you have damage on it, then you're responsible for it. But the insurance, I don't know how you're going to put it. You're going to have to pay $750 deductible if any damage is put through on the insurance. So, you know, you're out the $750. But
I understand.
So
just the same, anyway. It may be for some people this could be a very attractive opportunity, but it is just strange. It's so contrary to what you think of as ordinary business practices that we've observed over the course of our lifetimes, and all of a sudden here we're trying something that, how strange, you know? whole world is strange, and that's we talk about that on the program from time to time, and it's getting more peculiar every day. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's an unnerving thing for me. I'm sure that there are younger people who find it interesting, exciting, and cause for celebration just because, oh, how cool, you know, get a new Cadillac every 3 weeks. Hey, how cool is that? You know? I don't know.
What's
so again, this sort of thing we talked about a little bit with the idea of protectionism and just keeping your own nation and your own culture and your own values. I feel comfortable with that. But maybe the world has passed that by and we need to run and gun and hustle for every dime that shows up. And
I should say, you're
Jack Ma for president. How about that, Melody?
You're old.
Get Trump out of there and we can get Jack Ma.
You're ignoring me. Let's go on. What's next?
Well, I don't know. We got 2 minutes until the break. Venezuela hikes minimum wage 50% as hyperinflation rages.
That's not going to help them much.
No, and not only that. How did Venezuela get into such deep debt? And this is from CNN Money. How did Venezuela get into such deep debt? And my point, primary point on this is Venezuela's problem is almost certainly a function of its enormous debt. Right? And that's a word to the wise. If we go deeply into debt as individuals or a nation, we may follow in Venezuela's path. Venezuela's minimum wage keeps rocketing skyward as the country grapples with the insane levels of inflation. Inflation signals rising prices. Right? What used to cost $100 now costs $110, and then $150, and then $200 and $500. That's evidence of inflation. But there's three kinds of inflation from my perspective, and one is economic inflation, and that's driven by changes in supply and demand. If the supply of products falls, the price will inflate. It'll increase. If the demand for products rises, so will their prices. Right? That causes price changes. Second one is monetary. It's driven by increases or decreases, if you're looking for deflation, in the currency supply caused by governments and or the Federal Reserve injecting more currency into the currency supply, into the economy. And when they inject more currency, we see monetary inflation. We're going to take a break and we'll get back and we'll talk more about the inflation in general and in Venezuela in particular here on Financial Survival. Just a moment, please stay tuned.
Just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every heart is
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. I'm talking about Venezuela, an article on Venezuela and the hyperinflation they're experiencing down there and the inflation there. This article talks about it, starts out by mentioning the insane levels of inflation. We'll talk more about that in a minute. And what I just wanted to start out and say, look, there's three different kinds of inflation. There's economic, as I define it, there's economic inflation, which is driven by changes in supply and demand. If the supply of products falls, then the price will inflate. That means, that is to say, it will increase. If the demand for products rises, so will their prices. Right? That's just economics. There's also monetary inflation. And that's what happens when the government and or Federal Reserve start injecting more currency into the economy. All of a sudden, there's so much money around here that I sit back and I say, you know, I think I'm going to get one of those Cadillacs for $1,500 a month. I got so much cash. What the heck? Why not? Well, if they inject enough currency into the economy, it can stimulate the economy where we will go out and spend our currency on Cadillacs, $1,500 a month. Such a deal. But the third kind of inflation, from my perspective, is psychological. All right, this is psychological inflation. I haven't heard people talk about this in the past. This is a notion that is original with me. Doesn't mean 100,000 people haven't already figured it out and maybe rejected the notion, but it's a new idea for me, relatively new. And psychological inflation is hyperinflation. Hyperinflation is not simply a matter of the difference between 5% inflation and 20% inflation. It's not just a question of magnitude. It's a psychological effect. Hyperinflation takes place when the people have lost confidence in their fiat currency and don't believe it will hold its value for another year or perhaps another month or perhaps another day or even for another hour. And we've seen this in Zimbabwe, where the people, you know, they start losing confidence. They, all right, I'm going to spend $1,000 on a flat screen TV. And the guy running the store says, I don't know if I can sell it to you for $1,000. Used to be $1,000, but the way the value of the money is changing, I got to get $1,100 out of you to make sure that I still get my purchasing power out of this flat screen TV. I will sell it to you, not for $1,000, I'll sell it to you for $100. And then I've got a week or two to go down and buy whatever I'm going to buy with the $1,100, and I can exchange it for something reasonable in terms of purchasing power and product value, and so I don't get ripped off. That's if the inflation is not too bad. Going to increase, okay, I got to sell my flat screen TV for $1,100 rather than $1,000. But as the inflation becomes more rapid and people become more concerned about it, it moves from the point where it's merely a question of mathematics, it's not just economic, it's not just monetary. All of a sudden people are saying, oh my God, as soon as I get some cash in my hand, I got to sell it. I've got to use that cash to purchase something right away, or I'm going to lose my purchasing power because the hyperinflation is in effect and the currency is losing value, losing purchasing power as we speak. Again, Zimbabwe, classic illustration that the value of the currency in the morning was considerably less than it was in the afternoon. If you did a deal in the morning, the first thing you had to do is go buy something. You couldn't just let that currency sit in the cash register. It was losing money like the dollar, the gallon and dollar meter on the gas pump down at the 7-Eleven. I mean, it's the dollar is just constantly losing value. Under those circumstances, your confidence in the key, in the currency is diminished, and this is what feeds hyperinflation. It's not just a faster rate of inflation. It's a psychological inflation where people have lost the confidence. And we've had the Federal Reserve tell us for years that the foundation for the value of the fiat dollar is public confidence in its ability to purchase product, goods, and services. They admit it's all about confidence. That's what really holds the dollar's value. As long as people have confidence, we can continue to use these fiat dollars, right? And part of the evidence of that is that the dollar has lost 95% or more of its purchasing power in the last 45 years. Is anyone upset about that? Is anyone fearful? Not many. As long as the rate of inflation that was eating away at the value and the purchasing power of the dollar, as long as that rate of inflation was relatively slow, people don't get upset about it. But if something happens and that rate of inflation all of a sudden accelerates and people become fearful and they lose confidence, that's when we see hyperinflation. So, let's see, what else have we got here? Those of you who follow the Federal Reserve, well, I did that already. Once a paper, digital, or fiat currency fails, it's not likely to be replaced by another new and improved fiat currency. Once the public loses confidence in one fiat currency, it won't be easy and it may be impossible for the government to come in and say, oh, I've got a new and improved fiat currency. This one's pink instead of green.
Yeah, but, you know, it depends. I think it really depends. I mean, the Weimar Republic, they had to replace it by a couple of currencies before one.
All right. You know, it didn't just happen.
Until one finally stuck, and, you know, whatever the expectations were, or whatever moved the thought that this was the one that would stick, you know, from point A to point B, to that, you know, it wasn't backed by anything. So it's not necessarily has to be backed by a, you know, when they replace it, it does not have to be backed by
gold or silver.
Yeah.
Well, maybe. But the odds are high that once you get into this hyperinflation, if you're going to have your own national currency, you're going to wind up going to have to back it with something tangible like gold or silver.
And I think what's going to happen is I think it'll be either two-tier system. And I believe the tier that will be backed by gold is global trade. That's what's going to have to stabilize the monetary systems around the world. Globalism is not going to go away unless the world goes away, which is possible. There could be interruptions that prevent global trade from happening. I get that. But, you know, let's assume that global trade continues. I think that is what will have to be stabilized. I think gold will be used to stabilize that as far as our domestic currency. I'm not sure. Will they use our... because we don't have any central bank gold anymore. If you believe that if the Fort Knox is gone and the supplies of gold are limited or non-existent, gold will still play a very important part. I mean, gold is still going to rule central banks. It's going to be all about gold, which means the price of gold will rise to the numbers that we talk about on this program. 3,000, 5,000, you heard other people talk about 10,000.
And heard John Williams talk about 100,000.
Yeah, so...
All right, and Williams is a credible
and
individual.
And when we talk about global currencies, look at the debt that the world is in. So, yeah, you could see numbers that high. So
in any case, my point is that hyperinflation is not simply a faster rate of inflation. It's psychologically driven. It's not just a question of the difference between 20 miles an hour and 30 miles an hour. It's the difference between 20 miles an hour and something like a light warp all of a sudden people are scared to death and they have to dump. If they have the currency, they get rid of it as quick as they can. This article about Venezuela continues, and it says President Nicolas Maduro hiked the minimum wage another 50% on Sunday, the fifth increase in the past year. It follows a hike of 40% less than three months ago. That sounds like a big raise, but it pales in comparison with the dizzying increases in prices that have made food too expensive for many Venezuelans. Inflation is expected to surge to 1,600% this year and 2,900% next year, according to forecasts from the International Monetary Fund. Maduro on Sunday repeated his claim that the country is a victim of an economic war waged by his opponents. Probably Venezuela's, I'm just speculating here, but perhaps Venezuela's economic problems were caused by the same Russians who hacked into the Democratic National Committee's computers. Whatever the cause, it was not the fault of Venezuela's existing communist government or their beloved and highly intelligent President Maduro. He's not going to take responsibility for what's going on here. Right? He's blaming his enemies. Come on. The country's plunging currency and runaway inflation have made its banknotes virtually worthless. Maduro announced plans last month to print new bills in far higher denominations to replace old bills, including a 20,000 Bolivar note that's 200 times bigger than the largest note previously in circulation. And, you know, that's going to work. Just ask the Zimbabweans. They printed their Zimbabwean dollar went from some reasonable number to where they had $1 trillion Zimbabwean notes. And what happened? Did it get them out of hyperinflation? Did it assure their prosperity? No. What's funny, sad, and tragic about hyperinflation is that once it starts, the government of the afflicted nation goes through pretty much the same sequence of remedies as other governments that have been struck by hyperinflation. They raise the minimum wage. They try to increase economic regulations. They print bigger and bigger currency denominations in their paper currency, but none of it works. Nothing rebuilds. Once that confidence is lost, that public confidence is lost, nothing rebuilds it. Once the public begins to lose confidence in their fiat currency, hyperinflation takes command and chaos ultimately ensues. Article goes on and says, after the latest raise, that's raising the minimum wage, the minimum wage stands at 40,638 bolivars a month. That works out to just $12.14. Right? According to a popular unofficial exchange on dollartoday.com, if you add in food stamps, the Venezuelan wage rises 104,000 bolivars. That's still only $31.17 per month. Food stamps and worker bonuses make up most of the workers' total pay in Venezuela. And what all of this means, I don't know what the standard of living was in Venezuela before. It wouldn't be as high as it is here in the United States. But you can see if a minimum wage workers, the most they can expect is something like $30, $40 a month. This country is in desperate condition. And people are going to flee. They're going to go to other countries. Some of them who can't leave are going to be prepared for a shooting revolution. They will prepare themselves for a shooting revolution. Before it's done, Maduro may be shot, overthrown, run out of office. There's almost no way. I'm going to be very interested to watch this, but I don't think any politician is going to be able to make a recovery once the hyperinflation begins in his country. I think it's kiss of death, and we'll see. Might be true for Maduro, might be true for other countries, and insofar as virtually every country goes through who gets into hyperinflation, they use the same strategies to try to get out of it, and it never works for them. I don't think anybody's ever successfully pulled out of hyperinflation. I know that it doesn't kill everybody. The world continues to turn, but you go through a very, very difficult time until finally people say, all right, the start behaving like adults. Let's start behaving reasonably and rationally. And the dollar and the Zimbabwean dollar today, or the Venezuelan bolivar today, it's got to hold its value for a few days, a few months, a few years. And if it does, then we'll have confidence in it. But if it won't hold its value, it's going to just be destroyed in no time at all.
So people need to protect against that by purchasing gold and
because
silver.
We'll see the same thing here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, that's why Venezuela is interesting. It's a laboratory. It's an illustration of what happens when government becomes too leftist, when they become too eager to hand out free money to the unemployed and unemployable, and they get the money from the people who are productive. Ultimately, it collapses the system. And when it does, government's not going to take responsibility. They'll blame their enemies, and they'll... ultimately give you bigger denomination. They'll give you, instead of a $100 bill, they'll give you a $1 million bill. It won't be worth as much as a $5 bill used to be. And how do you deal with it? One of the ways you deal with it is you get yourself some gold, silver, something tangible that can retain its value in the event of a serious debt-based problem. Venezuela's deeply in debt. They went into hyperinflation. We are deeply in debt, and we will almost certainly go into hyperinflation before this problem is resolved. So, thank you all for listening. Melody and I are out of time today. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.